Welcome to another episode of the Buzzworthy Marketing Show. This is part two of what I'm like, just so many mind-blowing golden tickets here. And it's funny because right after we pushed pause on last week's show, guess what? Nico said, wait a second, I had a nugget. So if you haven't heard, if you didn't hear the first part of this, go back, just stop right now. Go to the other episode and start from there and then come back here, because what he's about to tell you is going to sound weird if you haven't heard the first part, but I want to make sure Nico gets this. So the question was, what are the key performance indicators that small business owners should focus on to gauge their operational health? And everybody wait for it. Nico is about to drop golden nugget.
Welcome to the Buzzworthy Marketing Show.
All right, here we go. So I listened to what Sean said. Buzz, you started talking about profitability, and it hit me that there are really two KPIs that matter more than any of the other KPIs, okay? And these KPIs basically explain your entire P&L to you. So the first KPI is, how profitable is selling one of my widgets, whatever product or service it is, okay? So you need to know that my product costs $2,000 to the customer. It costs me $1,000 to make it and deliver it. So I make $1,000 of gross profit from that. Okay. That's the first KPI. The second KPI is, how many of those widgets am I going to need to sell each month in order to cover all of my other expenses, rent, marketing, all that stuff that's in the expense section. Okay. So if you've got $100,000 in expenses, and you know that you make $1,000 of gross profit on each widget, you need to sell 100 widgets a month to break even. If you are tracking those two KPIs and you are saying, huh, I only sell 80 a month, you are not going to break even. If you look at those KPIs and you say, huh, 100 of these widgets, I think that's possible. Here's what I'm going to need to do in order to hit 100, in order to hit 120 in sales. And then you can take action, you know, towards that. If you say there's no way I'm going to be able to sell 100, you've got to look at your expenses and start cutting those expenses. So you can make all the decisions you need to make from those two KPIs.
Love that. We're going to go back around the horn here, because that was really good. And I see both of Cassie and Sean got, oh my gosh, I got something. All right. Sean.
Amen. Sometimes we do tend to make it a little bit more complicated than it needs to be. So I appreciate Nico mentioning, hey, there's really only a couple of things you need to look at, you know, your gross profit, your net profit, and start there. And then if one of them seems out of whack, drill down, find out where there's a leak. And that's where you can get a good accountant or a bookkeeper or somebody to help you drill down a little bit more and really look at the language of your accounting so that you can see where things are off. But I thought that was a great answer, response. Awesome. Great nugget. The golden buzzer. That's what we're calling that one.
Yeah. Cassie, do you have anything to add to that one?
I love constraint theory. So if I could give myself just two to compliment Nico's, I'm not going to go toe-to-toe, I'm not going to argue. But I would give two that I think are very interesting. One, if you do have a team, I like to look at profitability per employee. So if you have, you know, a $30 million company, you have 30 employees, what's your profitability per employee? In big tech, we talk a lot about revenue per employee, but top line revenue, not really a thing I want to go after. I want to understand profitability per employee, and that just helps me make more strategic decisions about how to grow team and team health. But I'll give you one more, and this is in my coaching practice when I'm advising companies and consulting with CEOs and founders. I'll ask them, when was the last time you took your spouse on a date? Or when was the last time you took your children on a date? And that ends up on a KPI sheet.
Yeah,
and if they say they're going to do it weekly and they don't,
right.
Forget profitability for a second, because I don't want to help you build a business that's going to cost you your family. I'm not interested in that. So yes. That usually it makes the sheet, and we just stop our work. And if they've done everything else that I assigned them to do, or, you know, all of our consulting objectives are met, and the one thing that they didn't do was hang out with their family member, I'm like, great. That's the only thing on your list for next week.
So I think you guys are hitting on the root of being an entrepreneur is not to own a job, it's to own a company. And if we don't track how much time we're putting into it, we'll never make enough time for ourselves, regardless of what it is. It could be taking care of kids, taking your dog for a walk. If your dog misses you, you're staring at it. There's times where I'm sitting here at 5-6 o'clock in the afternoon. My dog's sitting there going, "No, daddy, it's time. It's time to be off of that square thing and come and play with me." Right. And so if you don't have enough of that profitability to free yourself from that, then you do. You either have to. Some people don't realize that you can step back in your business and actually take on less business to allow yourself to then leap forward once you're able to put things in line for you to be efficient enough to have somebody else help you before you take on more clients, right? And people don't talk about that. They're like, push forward, forward. It's like sometimes retracting allows us to expand. So give yourself that freedom to say, you know what, this year is a consolidation of my responsibility, consolidation of the clients that I'm going to take on. It's going to be a little consolidation of cash in, but it's also going to be a consolidation of cash out so that you can create that nice runway of profitability and just leap past where you're at right now with the time there. Because, like you said, it's not worth growing if you don't get time to enjoy it, right? And last piece on that, if you've never read the book by Mike Michalis called Clockwork, he actually talks about specifically giving yourself the time, enough time to take a 30-day vacation from your business. So you can test how good your operations are and where your weaknesses are. So when you come back, your team will tell you, "Hey, God, we're glad you left, because now we understand where the stress points are. We understand where we're worried. We have to rely on you to get stuff done." And until you can walk away for 30 days, you own a job. You do not own that business. So with that, I want to come to the next question, which is, can you provide, give me some insights on how to build and or maintain a high performing team in the small business setting?
I'm going to leap forward this one really quick. I need to grab it and take it. I want to piggyback off of what we were just talking about. And when I had a W-2 job when I was in corporate and my role was COO, my number one KPI for myself was, can the CEO leave for 2 weeks, delete Slack from his phone, and is everything going to run? And I was working at the time for a CEO who hadn't taken a vacation in 5 years. And he didn't think I could do it. He didn't think we could do it as a team. And I basically made the case for him. I was like, I actually need you to evaluate the effectiveness of our operations by completely leaving and disconnecting. Mm-hmm. And it created some existential crises when he came back. So he's like, oh, actually things ran a little bit better without my interventions.
My first few years, I didn't leave the city limits of where I live in Anchorage, Alaska. I didn't come out of the bowl, which is, there's only like 11 miles of the bowl, right? I didn't leave that bowl for 2 years straight. So what you're saying is, it's not just the enterprise guys that are sitting there trying to be on the Fortune 100 list. We got guys that are they're listening to the show right now that probably haven't taken that. And I think what you just said is hitting hard, because I know it hits hard for me. And you know what? When I was able to finally take those vacations, even if it wasn't out of town, just to be able to walk away and know that things were being taken care of, man, that is huge, huge on that right there. Nico, you're itching.
Here's the second piece really quick. Actually instituted a mandatory leave policy for everyone in the company that they needed to take 2 weeks off, because then I could rigorously evaluate if they had put enough. It's a delicate balance, because I learned a couple people were just kind of skating and they weren't doing anything, which was great. Because after 2 weeks, I was like, all right, we need to have a different conversation. But occasionally, I also saw the employees who were so talented at what they did. They had the right SOPs in place. They had the right technology stack. They had the right KPIs. Their communication was so on point with their team. And I taught them how to create redundancy so they could step away as a leader and then they could come back refreshed and power up the business. So just because an employee leaves for 2 weeks does not mean that they're useless. It might mean that they actually are a superstar and should be creating more process, more redundancy, more efficiency in your company and you actually need to promote that person. But having mandatory leave is just great for accountability, visibility, transparency, and ultimately, you're going to know who your all-stars are, and you're absolutely going to know who some of the deadweight is on your team.
I love it. Nico, did you have anything to that?
Well, the question was how to build a high-performing team. Is that right?
And maintain it. Yes.
And maintain it. Okay. So for me, everything comes back to numbers and clarity, I guess, let's say. So, you know, I think what you need is you need clear goals for the company. I don't think you're going to have a high-performing team if they don't know what your mission is, what your goal is for the year, what metrics we're trying to hit. But once you set those goals, then you can sort of waterfall down the metrics and say, in order for us to double our revenue this year, that means the sales team has to make this many calls, have this many, you know, sales meetings, whatever. And you could do that for every business unit. So now you have goals by business unit and you start to track those. You start to measure the team. And like Cassie was saying, you pretty quickly realize who's really good at hitting their goals and who's not. And honestly, what we do a lot is we do start to replace people at our clients' businesses who are not able to hit their goals. We challenge them first. We give them the resources they need. If they still are not hitting it, you've got to bring in other people because those ones are dragging down the high-performing team culture. And once you sort of get all of these strong employees in who are hitting their numbers, it's just a positive feedback loop. And it keeps going.
I can attest to the fact that holding on to underperforming team members is killing your business. It's killing your profitability. You might look like you're growing. When I did my restructure in 2018 and went from a brick and mortar to a remote, going back through like notes and timesheets and all other stuff to find out where work was happening, how it happens, all the other stuff, because I had kind of brought myself out of the operations. I had an operations manager, right? But we found that, like Cassie was talking about, people were just not doing anything. They're sitting there. They're probably sitting on their own TikTok instead of actually working on the client's TikTok for me. You know, and it's like, how is this happening? Like, people, do they not understand this is stealing? And people are people, right? And people are great until they're not. And some people are just never that great. And you don't know that unless you do kind of the trust but verify, challenge, and measure as far as that goes. Sean, I want to ask you, you know, strategically, how does a CEO then of a small company that might not be able to even afford an operations manager? So they're still running that CEO, COO hat that most of us have to wear until we get, you know, into the multi-millions of dollars. To get a good COO, because let's face it, a COO is your business manager, right? That person runs your business, has to make decisions that you would make without you, right? So what's the strategy when you have a small team, say 10, less than 20 folks in implementing all of this and still giving yourself the bandwidth?
It's a great question because there is a difference between, at least in my view, between a corporate environment and a small business environment. Corporate environment typically has it pretty well defined, and you kind of know, hey, this is my job, and this is what you're hiring for, and it's pretty well defined. There's obviously some movement and changes and adaptations that need to be made, but small business, you need people around you that have what I like to call kind of that jack of all trades, master of none type approach, where they've got some skills in different areas that ideally offset your own. You don't want to duplicate. That doesn't do you any good. And that includes what I would call a leadership style of whether you're a visionary, whether you're more of an implementer, whether you're more kind of the servant leader, whatever it is. But you need to have that blend because you want good thinkers around you that can help think strategically about the business and not get too isolated in their one job. Because when you do that, you lock them in. And then it can sputter a little bit because that's all they're doing. It's just this one job that they view as a kind of their assigned job. But we've all kind of heard this, you know, you just said it, Buzz, but we all, when you're a micropreneur, you wear all the hats. Mm-hmm. And what you have to kind of do is as the founder, CEO, you want to find those parts of the job that you really just don't like, or maybe that you're not as good at. Mm-hmm. Try and find people that can take that off of your plate, but also they can add in other ways that maybe you haven't even thought of. It's not an easy thing to do, but it is critical if you want to move from a growth model to a scaling model. You've got to surround yourself with people that can think specifically about certain job responsibilities, but also think globally for the benefit of the business as a whole.
I think it lends to what I call intrapreneurship, where people are, they're working as if they own their job.
Yes.
Right? It's not just a paycheck. They have ownership in it, right? They have pride of ownership. And that intrapreneur is looking at their little part of it in, like what you said, like a kind of a global view, right? With a localized focus of their job, but they have a global view. So they understand, hey, wait a second, I've got disconnects, you know, because the worst thing you can do is have somebody just sitting there with their twiddling their thumbs going, well, I'm just waiting for the other person to do their job. That's not who you want in your business, especially in micro businesses, right? You need people who's like, wait a second, I'm not getting what I need. How can I get the, how can I get that? And not always being, hey, boss, how can I get this? So-and-so's not doing it. It's like actually going to people and saying, hey, how can I help you get what I need to me, right? Does that spur anything else from Cassie or Nico?
Cassie, you go ahead. Cassie is like the people ops expert. So
yes, true. Cassie, I'm going to give you the last word on this and we're going to move
on. All right, last word. I feel like that's like getting the last bite of dessert, you know, at a dinner party. It's a treat.
My wife calls it the perfect last bite.
I would just say to add to this, like, this is something I could nerd out about for another 20 hours. I would say the last kind of superpower to creating a dream team is having a decision matrix. So if you can teach everyone on your team to make more effective, better decisions, quicker, at a higher level, you're going to create outsized results in your company. So in some ways, as unconventional as this might sound, as a people ops expert, I throw out job descriptions once somebody gets hired and I let them know these are the expectations. Like Nico said, these are the KPIs. These are your goals. I think every employee needs to own at least one metric that contributes to revenue in the company. If you want to steer to profitability, everyone needs to own a revenue driving metric. But the second piece of the puzzle where most people just don't invest any time as a leader is communicating to the team. Here are the decisions you need to be making in your role. Here's the runway. And if you can teach proper decision-making, you're going to get yourself out of micromanagement and you're going to be knowing that your employees are extending not just that ownership mentality, but that they're doing the best thing for the customer because they're directly incentivized. If you can tie compensation into that number I just described, everyone's goals are aligned. But it starts with actually having a proper decision matrix so that people can come in and really understand, if I'm given this role, you know, you joked about TikTok. Like, how does TikTok tie into the bottom line of the company? Is my bonus tied to that in some way? Because now our interests are aligned. And what decisions do I get to make creatively and strategically to push this forward where I don't have to ask for input from anyone else? So as a leader, if you're teaching decision-making, you get to give influence over decisions, but you don't have to necessarily give input for good decisions to be made rapidly in succession, again and again. Good decisions that are benefiting your company and benefiting the bottom line and benefiting your customers. So if you could spend one thing as a leader teaching your team something that's going to create an outsized result, it's teaching them how to make better decisions without you.
Love it. I'm going to leave that as the last perfect bite for that question. I want to know, how can small businesses effectively manage scaling their operations without compromising the quality of their service? From a small business mindset.
I'll jump in if it's okay to do so. It starts, in my view, with a really, really clear understanding of what the vision, the values, the mission of the company are. You have to have that really clearly defined. And that has to be not just in the minds of the owner or owners. It has to be communicated to the team. It has to be. If they don't understand the values of the company, that I have this phrase I call values dictate decisions. You have to be able to define. And I love what Cassie said, by the way, because I think that this goes very well with what she just said. You have to enable your people to make decisions. But they can't make really good decisions if they don't know where the values sit and where the priorities are. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a difference between, hey, we're in business to make a bunch of money. Of course, we're all in business to make money. You need to be profitable. But Do you value the relationship with the customer? Because for a lot of service oriented, that's critical. And so how high up the value ranking there do you put that? If it's really, really high, then you might need to be willing to give a refund once in a while or something to that effect. And but you need to enable your people to make that decision. But they can't do that if they don't have a clear understanding of what the values of the company are and what direction you're headed. Without that, it's very difficult for them to make really good decisions without feeling like they're going to goof it up and somebody's going to come yell at them or something to that effect. So I think having really clear values, vision, and mission are very helpful to help the team scale so that they can be empowered to make really good decisions and grow their part of the company to scale the whole company.
So what I'm hearing you say is the key to scalability in a service-based business is autonomy.
To some degree, yeah. You have to at some point. You've got to let your people make some decisions, and you have to trust that you're, and ideally you're hiring people that are maybe a little smarter than you are in a particular area. And as depending on what leadership style you prefer, you may be the great visionary that's out there being the cheerleader for the company and being the primary salesperson, but you're letting your team, from an operations standpoint, they're taking care of the store while you're out selling. And so you have to be able to have that, leave that autonomy with them, and you go do what you're best at.
So this ties back into what Cassie was just talking about as far as systems and decision matrix, right? And just reading a book by Ryan Diaz, it's called Get Scalable. And he actually talks about the fact, like, you don't need a book of SOPs. You need a book of workflows. And then amongst those workflows, you're going to have some key points within those workflows that are going to be step by step. This has to happen this way. Otherwise, let people get stuff done, right? Because everybody's going to do some of this task can be done five different ways and it still gets the same output. And I think that that's one of the things that as a younger version of me didn't understand. I'm like, no, you've got to do it this way. But in design, you can get to a great design 100 different ways, right? So how do we tie autonomy with process?
I think there's so many good models out there for scalability. And I think some have been tried and true over the test of time, like Traction. I think EOS, Traction by Gina Wickman is one that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. Scaling up the Rockefeller habits would be the other one that I would mention. I like to go old school. I don't like shiny object syndrome. I'm like, look, if it's tried and true and proven, let's just like roll with that. Mm-hmm. But I think that to answer your question, Buzz, it's actually just mapping scalable operational process to the customer journey. Mm-hmm. So if you can map out and you know the customer journey backwards, sideways, upside down, and from every angle possible, everything in your operation should scale in conjunction with your customer journey. So when I go in and I evaluate operational effectiveness, the number one thing I'm looking at is customer journey. Mm-hmm. And to Sean's point earlier, extending that lifetime value, to Nico's point, understanding how much it costs to deliver that service. So all of those things tie together in my mind to customer journey. Mm-hmm. But I would build, design, and create operational scaling plans based off of that customer journey. And then the meta, of course, is that you have two customers, right? The customers that pay you and your internal customers, which are your employees. So you have mm-hmm. to think about both journeys in order for all stakeholders to truly be satisfied and working toward the same goals. But I think scalability directly tied to customer lifetime journey, which is also customer lifetime value, mm-hmm. is the way to scale a services-based business.
So between you and Sean, you know, I see this kind of like if you're a football player and you have the playbook, right? And we all study the playbook. We all know, you know, in this situation, we're going to do this. In this situation, we're going to do that, you know, and that's how these decisions are made within like 20 seconds and executed right there in real time, right? And the play is called in a lot of times to the quarterback, but the quarterback being your employee is now in the huddle, gives the call, but then gets to the line and sees something else different. And they have the autonomy to make a different call. The different call is still from the playbook because the whole line has to know what's going on. So that scalability is basically having this playbook that then they can, like Cassie was just saying, take it and run with it. Not to be too cliche with that metaphor. So there we go. Nico, I'm going to give you a last word on this one before we move on.
I was just going to say go Bills because they're playing this weekend.
No. Look, I think to summarize.
As long as they knock out KC, I'm a happy camper. So go for it.
Exactly. No, to summarize what you guys are saying, I think you have to be scalable before you scale. That's the thing. Like you got, like you're saying, Buzz, you got to have your playbook before you actually try to take it on. And I think, you know, if you know how you're trying to scale, that's also very important. Is this a we're going to hire 50 sales reps type of scaling, and we already have our, you know, service delivery process totally ironed out, and we can deliver it to 10x customers if we got them tomorrow? Or is this a we're scaling by opening 2 new factories? Like what type of scaling is it? And I think your playbook needs to be kind of built around the type of scaling. But yeah, be scalable before you scale.
I like that. I love that. So
mic drop.
Maya was, there's another golden nugget right there. He's getting, I can see all the calls coming in right now. The text messages for the votes there. So here we go. Last question. We'll wrap this up here. And I want to give everybody, we'll do a round the horn on this one. In your experience, what is the most common operational challenge faced by small service-based businesses, and how can they effectively be addressed?
Good question. I'll jump in. I don't want to go first again, but I'll, since the other two have you know, they're thinking more deeply. I know that Nico's sitting there thinking, what's my golden nugget on this one that I can drop on everybody? And
or you're all waiting to see who can get the last perfect bite. But well, let's go with you, Sean. Let's go.
Well, I'll jump in. You know, I was service-based. By its very definition, you're providing a service. And as the founder, owner, CEO, you are limited by your own capacity. And in order to go operationally, you have to let other people come help you. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, the word that always comes to mind in situations like this is delegation. You have to be willing to delegate. You have to know what to delegate. You have to know how to delegate. And then, of course, you got to get the right people in board to delegate that stuff too. But I see it a lot, especially in these micro businesses, small businesses like you're talking about, Buzz. They're trying to grow, but quite frankly, they are their own worst enemy in that situation because they haven't figured out how can I let other people do A, C, D. And that goes right back to what Cassie was sharing earlier about tying it together with a customer journey and mapping that together. You've got to be able to do that. Say, we need this, we need this, we need this, an assistant to come in and take care of these things. Even though you may think that you want to do that or need to do it, you've got to find a way. Otherwise, you're limited to your own capacity. And that's not a great... If that's where you want to be and you want to kind of just live there and you can make whatever amount of money you want to make, then so be it. But when we're talking about scaling, you have to be willing to delegate out. You just have to get some help.
I think that likens to the lifestyle business versus an entrepreneur, right?
Correct. Yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Nico?
I'll go next. And I racked my brain for a golden nugget. Like that was unique. But honestly, I agree with Sean. I think Sean's right. You know, and we call this problem the hub and spoke problem, where the owner is the hub of the business. Mm. And then you've got all your customers come to you, all your suppliers come to you, all your employees come to you. And you're just never going to run an efficient organization that way, certainly not a scalable one. So mm-hmm. I agree with Sean. I think it's the hub and spoke issue.
I love that. And so with that said, like, you're owning a job, right? And a lifestyle business is a job. You just happen to be both the boss and the employee of the same entity, right? And that means you can never go on vacation if you are the hub, because you take the hub out, the whole wheel falls apart, right? So I think that if you're, as a listener, are hearing that you're looking at yourself going, yeah, that's right. Everything comes through me. Now you have to start asking the questions that Sean was talking about. What can I delegate? What can I relegate? Right? Like, just give up ownership completely. That's a huge thing for some business owners, right? Like money. Like, that's the hardest thing, I think, for some people, is that their bookkeeping has to be them because it's their money, right? And from somebody who's been like stolen from multiple times, had one operations manager, or no, not operations manager, my office manager, stole $25,000 from me.
Oh my,
underneath my nose. You know how hard it was to let somebody else look at my money after that? Right? But we have to create the systems that allow us to let go
of those things, because every single one of those is, that goes up there. So I love what you said, Nico. And we're going to give the last perfect bite. Well, maybe not the last perfect bite, the second last, because I'm sure I'm going to say something after you say
something. I bet you are. I don't think you could help it. Thanks for being our fearless host. Relegate vocabulary word of the day. Okay, I see you. All right, so I'll keep this brief. Services-based business. One of my clients in 2022, he did $50,000 because he was part-time in one business, part-time in another. He wanted to go all in. And in 2023, we took his business up to $555K. So we did a 10X leap. And when we think about operational efficiency, you know, everything broke. Mm-hmm. And he was so scared to go out and sell because he was like, everything's going to break. He said, that's a brilliant problem to have. Then you hire an operator because guess what? You have cash. But the number one and two things that he did were he took on the identity. He set the goal. I'm going to hit 550K. He hit 555. He took on that identity of what would that business owner act like? How would they show up? What would they be spending their time on before he was there? And then he started making decisions from that place. So I think to unlock operational bottlenecks, I would go kind of meta on this one. I think it's knowing your goal, like back to Sean's point, knowing your vision, knowing your values, knowing your mission. What mission are you going on? What are you trying to achieve here? And if you take on that identity before you actually get there and start making decisions from that place, it's okay if everything breaks. You hire somebody to come help you. That's actually a brilliant problem to have. As long as your customers are getting served, all the operations are a mess for a week or two, perfect. But don't be afraid to go sell just because operations might not scale at the same rate. Go and get cash. Then you know you have a business. You have a playground that's fun to play on.
It's what we call first world problems here. All right, real quick, I want to go around the horn. How do people get and either plug into your ecosystem of knowledge, because you all three of them are just a plethora of knowledge, and as everybody heard, there's different focuses on all three of them. That's why I wanted to bring them all together so you guys could get different aspects of these questions here. Sean, how do people either plug into you and where you're at or get in contact with you?
Sure, I appreciate that. BlueSkyBiz consulting.com. That's my website. You're more than welcome to go there and take a look, take a listen, whatever you want to find there, and be more than happy to connect with people. I'm also on LinkedIn. Sean J. Richards is the profile there, and you're welcome to reach out and make a connection and tell me that you heard me on here on Buzz's podcast and everybody, or your show, or whatever you're calling it.
Buzzworthy Marketing Show.
There it is. So if you mention that, I'll find some freebie little thing I can give you as a bonus.
Awesome.
Find it.
And we'll also make sure that all of your links are in the show notes. Nico, how can people reach out to you and or plug into your ecosystem of knowledge?
Yeah, so I just added our website into my name right there. You guys can take a look at that. You can check out our website to get some more information or find me on LinkedIn. We post a lot on LinkedIn, little nuggets and things that you can learn. So, and feel free to reach out on LinkedIn as well. I love talking to small business owners.
Awesome. Last but not least, Cassie.
Awesome. LinkedIn. That's where the party is. Would love to have you join, ask questions. My DMs are open and I speak the language of puns and food. I'm a total foodie. So please hit me with some really terrible puns or tell me the last best food you've eaten. And then we can talk about operations after that.
Again, everybody's information is going to be in the show notes. And while you're down there, go ahead and if you haven't done it already, subscribe to the show, Buzzworthy Marketing Show. This is where it is at. It's going to be in one of these directions.
Wherever it is, you should do it.
And give us a review. We want to know what you think. We only have 888 five-star reviews, so we'd like to see 1,000. Will you be part of that? Great. If not, stay buzzworthy.